Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate batteries. I use Interstate batteries in my boats. I use Interstate batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today.
Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. You simply pour a can into your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. So pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more.
I'm sure a lot of you guys remember the old ceremonial hunting tradition of eating the heart out of the first animal you kill. Meat from those organs are among the most nutrient-rich foods on the planet. You can get those same benefits your ancestors craved via convenient daily capsules from Heart and Soil. Find out more at heartandsoil.co. And remember, use code MeatEater for 10% off your purchase.
Welcome to the Wired to Hunt Foundations podcast, your guide to the fundamentals of better deer hunting. Presented by First Light, creating proven, versatile hunting apparel for the stand, saddle, or blind. First Light. Go farther, stay longer. And now, your host, Tony Peterson.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Wired to Hunt Foundations podcast, which is brought to you by First Light. I'm your host, Tony Peterson, and today's episode is all about patterning deer and how we often get this task so very wrong. When I was in high school, I got permission to hunt this dairy farm where quite a few people had permission to hunt. One of the other hunters was maybe, I don't know, like 10 years older than me, and he had a reputation for being a big buck killer. I randomly bumped into him walking out one morning, and he showed me some pictures. Actual printed photographs, not cell cam pics, since it was like 1996. And there were just several big bucks that he had killed. He then pointed to a valley on the farm and said, "They usually bed in there and drop down on the hillside to go feed in the evening." And I remember thinking, I don't know, I've hunted that hillside a lot, and that's just not been the case. But it turns out that he was right, so was I. And now I'm going to tell you how that can be true. Do you know why we love music so much? Part of the reason is that we have a long history, like 2 million years of history, where recognizing patterns helped us either fill our bellies or keep us from filling something else's belly. In fact, our creation of music and our hunting abilities are intertwined, even if that's hard to believe because you're, I don't know, as tone deaf as a fence post, but you love to hunt. Now, whether you're talking melody in the form of a catchy chorus or rhythm in the form of a guitar riff that just makes you feel all warm and fuzzy, music is built on a foundation of repetition. In that latter case, the key to a good riff is that it involves playing notes or chords, but also utilizes the silence in between. This gives you, the listener, a chance to anticipate the next notes and gives the song kind of this feeling that it's progressing. Take one of the best songs that has ever been written, "Wish You Were Here" by Pink Floyd. I'm teaching my daughter to play the rhythm for this song on her acoustic guitar, and she's pretty good, but her timing sucks. While she might play every note in the right order, without the right spacing, it doesn't work. The pattern falls apart, and our brains don't like it one bit. Now, with music, it's pretty easy to identify patterns. It happens damn near naturally to all of us. Our brains just do the work, and we know what sounds good and what sounds off. This ability is a bit more subdued out there in the wild, where we might be clued into super obvious patterns, but not into the subtle ones that allow us to hunt deer or other critters more effectively. This is kind of wild considering our ability to recognize patterns came from our continual quest to survive and thrive as a species. Of course, you have the patterns in nature that keep you alive, but don't help you hunt. Take honey, for example. That delicious bee puke is one of our most ancestrally consistent foods. It can be found all over the world, or at least in most of the parts that people can actually live, and it has been eaten by us for a long, long time. That's one of the reasons natural honey is also really good for you. Your body knows what to do with honey. Unlike, I don't know, say, a package of Gushers or some other junk food that was created in a lab. We like the look of hexagons stacked on top of one another, which is a pattern that can be found where honey is often found. We also don't like the look of 200 bees swarming a single spot, which makes us run. A few bees is a different story. Now, I read a line in an article about this that goes, evolution necessitates economical and reliable brain mechanisms in some environmental context. Take a couple of caveman hunters looking to throw a spear into something big and meaty here. They head out to hunt, but on the trail ahead of them, they see some wolf tracks. Or maybe the tracks of a short-faced bear. They have learned that a lot of wolves, big trouble, but a few might be manageable. They have also learned that one short-faced bear that's having a bad morning can reduce their little family group by several members in a matter of seconds. The pattern of the wolf tracks would mean they need to investigate to determine how many there are. Maybe there are just two distinct sets on the trail, but old Ugg and Kronk or whoever swing low and high and they find two more sets. They have learned that wolves don't always travel in single file, and underestimating the amount of toothy dogs they could run into can be very costly. There's a pattern to the wolf's behavior, which shapes human behavior into patterns, just like the presence of one single big danger like the short-faced bear caused humans to change their behaviors a lot. You know, then you have other connections that result in us recognizing patterns. Say, a certain tree bears fruit during a few weeks of the year when the weather is just right. And not only is that fruit good for you to gather up and bring back to the tribe, but it also draws in deer who understand the same pattern you do. Now you have a plant pattern that's tied into a weather pattern, and also a certain geographical pattern that causes humans to learn a new pattern of behavior while being exposed to certain prey animals and their behavior around the same kind of pattern, which undoubtedly causes the deer to be a little more cautious because, well, we know that they're patterning us too. There are songs that are created with nothing more than an acoustic guitar and a singer. Then there are songs created by whole teams of folks playing a multitude of instruments and using every single technological advancement they have to add sounds. Patterns can be simple, and they can be complicated. As hunters in today's world, we strive to make them simple. We put in a food plot and hope the bucks just decide it's a good place to eat every day. Or at least the does do. And then we leave them alone about, you know, until Halloween and then the bucks start coming in. Simple. We don't really have to know where they bed or where they travel or what they do when they don't come in. We just need to know that the pattern contains at least some level of them entering the food plot. So we volume hunt it once it should turn on. It's actually pretty simple until it's not. How often have you had a good plan? Now, I mean, one where you just had so much confidence, and then you executed and you didn't see anything. What happened? Did you not understand the pattern to their deer movement? Or did they understand your pattern better than you thought? Was it just bad luck? I'm convinced that one of the reasons people struggle so much with elk hunting isn't that there's a ton of pressure and the bulls are quiet. Now, sure, that happens, but I also think it has to do with the fact that most of us, and by us, I mean residents and non-residents in Western states and, you know, Midwest and East, who just show up in the mountains to hunt, all of us, it's hard to really scout elk. It's hard to really see elk. It's hard to pattern them, and they live in a world that is much larger than the whitetails, which means even if there is a repeatable pattern, observing it directly or figuring it out from sign alone, it's just a tough proposition. Whitetails are different, but we've also been conditioned to believe that they are super patternable. They generally aren't, at least if they live in a place with a moderate level of hunting pressure. Now, I know I've talked about this 1,000 times, but the advice you've been hearing forever on whitetails often comes from a place where they are very patternable, because they don't have a lot to fear. I heard a story about a giant, like 190-ish whitetail, that got shot on film by someone on one of the most popular shows out there, and they managed to capture 2 different angles of the kill with 2 different cameramen because they knew how much they had of that buck's pattern coming into a certain food plot. Very consistent. Now imagine trying that, putting a hunter and a cameraman on one side and then a cameraman on the other side of the trail, and even killing a forky in most places. Be pretty tough, let alone a deer that's bumping up on 200 inches. You don't have that, but that's okay. There are still plenty of patterns out there for you to recognize and use during your hunting season and for every season for the rest of your life. This is where the advice is going to get a little tricky, but I'm going to do my best. When we talk of patterning deer, we tend to default to the thinking that concerns a single buck, or at least mature bucks. We think about finding a giant bed, getting trail camera photos of the deer and a food source, and then working with that info to fill in the blanks. And that's certainly one way to start patterning deer.
We've all seen plenty of gadgets and fads come and go, but here's one product that stood the test of time: Seafoam Motor Treatment. Lots of hunters and anglers know that Seafoam helps engines run better and last longer. And it's really simple. When you pour it into your gas tank, Seafoam cleans harmful fuel deposits that cause engine problems. I'm talking common stuff like hard starts, rough engine performance, or lost fuel economy. Seafoam is an easy way to prevent or overcome these problems. Just pour a can in your gas tank and let it do its job. Now, you probably know someone who's used a can of Seafoam to get their truck or boat going again, because people everywhere rely on it to keep their trucks, boats, and small engines running the way they should the entire season. So, help your engine run better and last longer. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit seafoamworks.com to learn more.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there, because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater.
The other is to pattern deer in general. This is where most of your big buck public land hunters have a huge advantage over most folks. They understand that the task does involve finding some big bucks and patterning them, but they are starting first with the knowledge of what patterns are most likely in the environments they'll be hunting. What I mean by that is they scout and scout and hunt and hunt. And pretty soon, when they walk into a place that they've never been before, they start to recognize terrain features that mirror other terrain features they've been around a lot. They start to see sign in specific spots. They enter the deer's world with an understanding of how deer use that world. And so much of the work they've put in other places becomes directly applicable to the task at hand in a new spot. This goes for someone hunting a different chunk of land in the same county they always hunt. And for somebody, I don't know, traveling from Pennsylvania to Kansas or from South Carolina to Tennessee. This is a hard thing for people to really grasp, but it's true. Part of the problem here is that we all have, you know, kind of local bias where we think we are hunting the hardest kill deer out there. This is always wild to me as someone who has traveled a lot. Because over time, you find areas that are just really difficult. And you hunt areas, even on public land, where the hunting is so much easier than other spots. But what is consistent throughout is that a lot of the locals think they are hunting the toughest to kill deer. That gives them a built-in excuse for failure, and it also changes how they view patterns. Think about it this way. If you hunt, say, Michigan public land, and you just know you have more hunting competition than anyone, you might find some rubs all clustered together on the edge of a small creek. And you might immediately think, well, there's a decent one around, but he's going to be nocturnal because all of the bucks here are nocturnal because we have so much pressure. Then you take that same hunter and he finds a similar setup in Iowa after waiting 6 years to draw a tag. Do you think he's going to write that spot off as a lost cause in Iowa? The sign and the environment are pointing him in the exact same direction, but the difference is how he views the situation. Or take that Iowa hunter who has no idea how easy his hunting has been while growing up on grandma's farm and having a couple hundred acres to himself. That person has developed an understanding of patterns around a high deer population and, you know, relatively easy to kill deer. Then he goes to the swamps of Louisiana or northern Wisconsin, where their deer population is 10% of what he's used to. He sees a bench on a hillside with a single bed on it. You know, a few scattered rubs here and there. And he thinks, this is like back home, but the sign just doesn't do it for me. There isn't enough to work with. But has he calibrated himself to the environment? Or is he taking what he's used to and applying it to a world in which it doesn't really apply? Same pattern. It just appears less impactful due to the fact that there are so many fewer deer. Now, you don't have to travel anywhere to get tripped up by this. Take your home farm. Your lease, the public land you hunt, whatever. You probably believe you understand the deer movement really well, but does your hunting reflect that? I mean, do the results of your efforts reflect a deep understanding of what all the deer do or what the big deer do? Maybe, but I'll bet that they often don't. They don't for me, and honestly, one of the things that's the hardest for me is to kill a big deer on places I know really well. You know, places that also allow other hunters in or places that are public. I feel like I know what the deer do on paper, but in the woods, I'm often subjected to a reality I don't expect. Sure, we know the bucks bed up on a certain ridge, and we know they are going to get to the beans to feed. But why do they so rarely follow that script? How do we get it wrong so often? Well, for starters, as much evolution as we have relating to the patterns of our environment, the deer have the same advantage. They've evolved to recognize patterns too. I talked about this recently, but I think a good way to look at it is that if you're not happy with your hunting in general, it's probably because you think you understand their patterns better than you do, while also underestimating how good they have you patterned. With the first part, it's best to treat it like a scientist. What do you believe the deer are doing? And how do you believe you'll cross paths with the deer that you want to kill? Do that and ask yourself how well it worked out. Are you consistently surprised that you don't see mature bucks, even though you seem to be hunting in a way that should produce, at the very least, some sightings? Then there's a hole in your game. That's okay. There are holes in all of our games. We mostly won't see big bucks on any given day, but we also shouldn't let that stop us from trying harder. And there's also another reality here. If you want to actually pattern big bucks and kill them, you might need to rethink when you hunt and where. D deer start the season as patternable as they'll be all year. And if you don't take advantage of that, things get difficult in a hurry. The earlier the opener, say, you know, a September 1st opener versus a mid-September opener, or even an October 1 opener, provides a huge advantage. A good percentage of the bucks I have on my walls died in September because a summer pattern is an easy pattern to recognize. Now, I also have quite a few bucks that I killed in mid-October because they tend to slip into a pattern then as well. They react to the pressure, they move into the cover, and they get harder to see for a lot of hunters who stay outside the cover. But the great leveling agent there is, you know, those October bucks leave more and more sign. So instead of direct observation to build a pattern, it's often more a matter of finding sign and maybe running some cameras. Even then, you're still just playing the odds, because most deer, at least after a week or two of the season, they don't do the same thing over and over again. I firmly believe that. Think about how often you have checked a trail camera and has shown a certain buck using a certain trail a couple of times in 1 month. There's a loose pattern there. You know, it's just diluted by a hell of a lot of days where the buck did something else. This happens all the time. And even consistent bucks are somewhat inconsistent in that they are definitely not going to do the same thing every day. You know, they might get thrown off by the presence of predators or the weather changes or whatever, but they have a pattern they adopt when those things happen too. We just might not know what the hell that means. We also know that prey animals that make their daily habits a little too well known are ripe for predation. The deer that vary up their schedule make themselves less patternable, which makes them more likely to survive. I think this is where the lesson matters the most. Just like when you're writing a song and instinctively know to give some space at certain points in the rhythm or the melody, the patterns deer follow often have a lot of dead air in between the movements. We want bucks that do the same thing every day, but the bucks that do that often get shot when they're a year and a half old or 2.5 years old. The bucks that make it to maturity, you know, either consciously or probably unconsciously, engage in a lifestyle that isn't point A to B cookie cutter stuff every day. They change up their routine often and bed here or there and take this trail and not that one. But over time, if you do your job, you'll see a pattern in the conditions and the location that comes together to give you higher odds of running into the deer that you want to run into. That's what's so damn fun about this stuff. You can get it dialed, or think you have it dialed, and still fail miserably. But you can also get it dialed and watch it work out in real time. And there are very few feelings in hunting that rival that accomplishment, because it's just so dang rare and so special. So think about this as you're scouting right now, and as you're turkey hunting, and you know, you watch some shed buck hop a fence in a certain spot and drop into a valley. And as you're thinking about getting some cameras out, you know, in the next couple of months, think about this stuff and their patterns. Think about coming back next week, because I'm going to talk about regrets in life and in hunting. That's it for this week. I'm Tony Peterson. This has been the Wired Hunt Foundations podcast, which is brought to you by First Light. As always, thank you so much for your support. Everybody here at Meat Eater, we are nothing without you, so it truly means the world to us that you show up and you support us. If you're dying to get more of a fix on some content, whether that's an article, maybe, you know, Clay's podcast or the Element Boys or whatever, or you want to watch some hunting videos, head on over to themeateater.com. Tons of content there. Maybe you'll find a recipe for that gobbler you're going to kill this week. Whatever. Go check it out. Thank you.
Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate batteries. I use Interstate batteries in my boats. I use Interstate batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today.
Outdoor Adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. You simply pour a can into your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. So pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more.